All right, everybody. So this is a slightly different opener than you usually get from us here at Know Your Rights. And that's for a very tragic, awful reason. And that's that we lost our old friend, our old bandmate, Hollis Marcus. What'd it be?
Coming up on 2 weeks on Sunday. Yeah.
And this is something that Rob passed the news to me. And it's like just a sheer state of shock.
Yeah, I think the reason we're doing this is we just want to kind of give him his love because he was a really good guy. And it's just
we sit here and we talk about music and songwriting, things that I mean, I just to sit here and talk with you, buddy, is the highlight of every 2 weeks for me. And
yeah, same here.
All it does is it brings back memories of playing shows more often and all that stuff. And Hollis is really, in a lot of ways, the core of a lot of those memories for me.
Oh, absolutely. Not just because he's a drummer, you know, he that's where we rehearsed. We rehearsed a lot in his garage.
With Kenny, his father.
Yes, sir.
RIP as well. There's a lot of really great memories wrapped up in just regret that we weren't talking as much by the end. But I just think you can already tell from people who are online talking about him. He was a special kind of guy. And
absolutely.
I think people who met him momentarily saw how sweet he was. But I think if you were a friend of his for longer, he was very funny. He had a dark sense of humor. It was a very funny sense of humor, though.
I remember a lot of like just him laughing. That is so much of what I remember. He's always trying to keep, at least for me personally, my spirits up, you know. Especially having a tour with me, you know, he did a good job of helping me out with that as well.
Yeah. And as a drummer, I think the thing with Hollis as a drummer is I don't think I'll ever be as loose as he was in the best way possible. Like I was going back and listening to old tracks of his. If you listen to my album, Good Luck With Your War, there are two tracks, especially that he drummed on that. I've never played drums, for example, to By Any Means Necessary. Like I literally never played those drums because Hollis is the only one I think that did. And it's, I don't know, like I'm always like things that he did in his sticking and in the way that he would put fills in that I think there was like a real true creative kind of poetic piece to that I'll, you know, it's just nice to have that captured now.
Well, the beauty behind it is, I mean, he played from a real spot of joy. Like he was happy to be playing drums, just like, let's do it. To where, I mean, you and I've had to record drums and most of the time I'm very stressed out trying to get the drums to sound correct, you know, sound just right. And
he drums is not a happy time for me.
But for him, he's just like, yeah, let's do it. Let's rock.
Yeah. I wish there was like a lot of great Hollis memories that I feel like aren't to be shared.
Of course.
Mainly because they're things for us. Maybe, but
absolutely.
They're out there and we love you, man. And it's just fucking awful.
It really is. And yeah, we just wanted to kind of take a moment and talk about our buddy.
Yeah. Well, but you're going to get a different version of Rob and I when we talk about the Who, because this is before everything, but
yeah,
we hope you enjoy the episode.
Yes, please do. Laugh.
Talk about music with your friends. That's great. Do that sometime over the week.
Amen.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law.
And we know our rights. Unlike someone else, I need to have it all on my
I have sheet. It. I have notes. Jesus. This is going to be great.
I underwent. Look at this.
Look at that thumb.
Look at this thumb.
Take the Band-Aid off and show me how bad the wound is.
I cannot do that. All right, are we
welcome everybody.
This is I gotta get myself like Like, I'm like slapping my face, getting myself all like pumped to go. I'm suffering.
You were like cat smacking your face. You weren't smacking your face. You were.
I don't think I must have like knocked myself unconscious. I'm suffering blood loss.
Give yourself a good.
All right, everyone, you hear this? Can you? Does this read on the mic?
God.
God, that hurts. That's not good.
Yeah. Colton, how did your surgery go?
It's all right. I feel very, like I said, like I think part of the reason I'm a little like sluggish is I didn't know my thumb actually had that much blood that could pump to it. It's pretty impressive.
How much blood are we talking here?
This, so like
you based off of how towel, hard you just smacked your face,
which hurts. I shouldn't have done that. That was bad. You could talk me into a lot of things. I don't like that about you, but I. Yeah, I had a little issue. I was trying to get to the top of the tree in our backyard. We have some persimmons that I'm trying to cut down. They're like one of my favorite things. I have them on toast with almond butter. And so I had my ladder. I told my wife, I'm going out there. I'm getting some persimmons. She wasn't going to be able to help me, which was probably warning number one that I should not have done it. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, I had this like weird kind of, I was like, I'm going to do it. I want persimmons. This will be fine.
Yeah, you felt motivated today. You got up and went like, I'm going to do something.
I'm feeling great, and yeah. I get to the top of the ladder. I got my little basket up at the top, and I got these shears, which were not great shears. They're very rusty. Is anyone? Am I painting enough rust of a scene? Forever?
I love this imagery. I can see it all in my head.
This is like total Final Destination. Like, how many dumb things can one person do to set up their own death? Yeah. Here's the crazy thing: is everyone's thinking, and then you cut your thumb with the shears? Not even. I pinch my thumb with the kind of the back end of the shears.
You made it sound like you, okay. Anyway, go ahead.
Wait, why are you upset by that? I've told you what happened.
Because all of the elements of this is really just leading up to Colton. Come on now. I'm not trusting you if there's a zombie apocalypse.
Oh, I'm not. I don't want to be around. I think that's like a weird fantasy people have of like, oh, zombie apocalypse. I'm out. Mm-hmm. Like day one, I am like.
I think I can get a weekend. I can get 1 week in and then I'll just be tired. And it'll really be one of those days where somebody's like, Rob, you got to get up. We got to leave. And I'll be like, just let me get bit by a zombie while I'm sleeping.
Now, I mean, that's the thing is I'd rather just be a zombie at that point. Like, I feel like that would be more fun. You're taking away from my thumb story, by the way.
I am a little bit. Zombie.
How dare you? No, it's, I mean, it's done. It's, I got a little purple bandage on my thumb.
Look at you.
Yeah.
That's what's going to. That's what's going to hold you back in the zombie apocalypse. You're going to be like, dude, guys, my thumb.
Do you know what's going to hold me back? Here's the reality. I think about this actually a lot. The minute that society breaks down, my eyesight is so bad that if my glasses get broken, I'm basically done.
It'll be that Twilight Zone episode.
Where his glasses break. It's like, my books. You know, the only reason I'm aware, I think you can guess this. The only reason I'm aware of that Twilight episode is not the Twilight episode.
Don't say Twilight. Please say Twilight Zone.
No, it's the Twilight Zone.
It has nothing to do with vampires and werewolves.
It's the Family Guy joke about the Twilight Zone episode that I'm thinking of. But
please tell the joke.
Well, I don't remember what it is. It's like the brain cell, right, at the top of Peter's head. And he's like, oh, everyone else is gone now. It's just me.
Why'd you bring it up if you don't know the actual joke?
It's the basic thing. This is what I know you don't have anything else to talk about because you're like, I'm just going to ask Colton a bunch of stupid questions and see how much time I can fill.
I got plenty of things to talk about. Got plenty of things. All right.
Go ahead. Give me one.
Who are you rooting for in the last four teams right now?
You're not allowed to talk about anything anymore. I'm not even watching. I don't watch playoff baseball Dodgers aren't in it.
This is something I don't like. I don't like this about sports is it shouldn't just be your team. I mean, you root for your team. No, you also enjoy the sport, right?
Do you know how much baseball I watch outside of the Dodgers? Like if like another team is on?
I'm going to guess 0%.
0%.
I don't have a,
it's like with any sport, like I like to just watch sports, like just to watch it. It's fine, but I have to have a rooted interest or to else.
To quote Zach De La Roca, know your enemy. All right, Colton, you have to. I hope I got his last name right. I've always kind of botched that.
Or is it Rocca? Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I think that's the first time that Rage Against the Machine has made it onto this podcast. That feels late. I wouldn't have bet episode 18, but there. Can I tell you, just to give you a little bit of taste of something, while I was listening to one Who record in particular, we are talking about the Who, everybody.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry. I probably should have given that disclaimer at the beginning. For those who have just dove in, we will talk about the Who.
It's coming. I mean, it's on the episode title. They have to know.
Let us riff a little bit. You know,
like, we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Actually, a little less than 2 weeks.
I love this dude.
I almost died today.
He did. He almost lost a thumb. Almost lost a limb. Phantom thumb was coming up.
A few layers of one thumb. But no, I to get into that particular record of the Who, I actually did a little bit of research and I listened to some Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Band, which I had listened to in the past.
I know exactly which album you're talking about.
I had to listen to it because there's some controversy around those two albums that I needed to kind of figure out for myself. So there you go. I listened to the Beatles.
Well, I can't wait for a further elaboration.
It'll be amazing. It'll be about as exciting as it sounds right now. So there you go. That's the
shit.
I heard, first of all, as a reminder, everybody, because we do have some fan mail, I've heard, but as if you have questions, if you have comments, go ahead and leave it to us at no.your.writes. How do you spell writes, Rob?
WRITES.
Dot podcast at
how do you spell podcast, Colton?
POD. I feel so alive.
We're not talking about that band.
Nation. What else? Boys from the South. Here comes the Ready or Not.
Yeah. Forgot that.
that is not my guilty pleasure.
It is not. There. What? Why would you be saying that? I haven't even read the email yet.
Cut it out.
No, we'll leave it.
Okay. All right.
So we got an email. Another one, everybody. Look at this.
2 weeks in a row.
And this is supposed to be part two of our classic rock saga.
This is what brings it out. People just really get into it.
Yeah. All right. So I got an email from Leon It is Leon. It does say Leon from California, possibly Lancaster. Do you have any guilty pleasure albums? As in an album that most fans dislike that you actually enjoy? And part two is, are you both ready for my wrath? And I will just give this away. Leon is Leo Cardona, a.k.a. DJ Brute, a.k.a. the host.
Can I check with something? His actual name is Leon?
It's not.
Okay.
That's just what it comes in on the Gmail. But just a really quick, great question, Leo. Great question. He is also the host of, they're not really even our sister podcasts, but I just kind of feel like there's a
they're like connection. an adopted sister podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Like we're step siblings.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Leo, great question, and everybody please check out
Chit Show.
Yeah, and Bedroom Radio every Monday from 5 to 9. It's wonderful. It's a good time. And
Renaissance fan. Yeah. So a guilty pleasure album.
Yes.
I did think about this because, like, I mean, people know you mentioned this to me before. I have to prepare people. I'm undergoing severe blood loss. My brain needs time to pump through things. Funny, I have so many. Like, it's actually kind of staggering when I think of, like, what albums do I like that I feel like I could share and people wouldn't give me shit for. It's actually
good.
That's probably good. A better thing to think about. I think my history with Kid Rock is pretty established on this podcast.
Kid Rock was running through my head. I didn't want to say anything, but
I think in which to be like, I could get into that, but I feel like
it's too obvious.
When you are of a certain age, right, which we are both of, if you were coming up in elementary school, for me, it was like fourth and fifth grade, specifically fifth grade, where new metal was on the rise, right? It's probably like the golden age of new metal, which was actually a golden age.
I'm gonna call it bronze.
Bronze-ish, sure. Yeah. I don't think
they reached gold personally.
Having Kid Rock, Korn, Limp Bizkit records, it wasn't some like huge faux pas. Like, it's to me, that's not quite as egregious. The album
natural.
And I don't spin those all the time anymore or at all. But the album that I do go back to and listen to, and I will tell you, has played at my bachelor party, which you were invited to, Rob. I think you played a show that day.
I think you knew I wasn't coming.
I remember thinking, What show were you playing?
I came better to your than wedding.
This party.
I came to your friggin' wedding, and that was already a very
was it at the scenario. Trap? Was the show at the Trap?
Probably.
Oh my God.
I mean,
terrible.
It looks a lot better now these days, dude. I think.
Well, anywho, my guilty pleasure is Justin Timberlake 2020 experience. Also, though, Man of the Woods. I think Man of the Woods, the follow-up, is the worst one. That is, because just 2020 experience is actually, it's Timbaland, right? It's a lot of really great production on that record. I don't know if Timbaland does as much on Man of the Woods, but that record is not great. And yet, I remember it came out and it was on like Amazon Prime. I had like the app and I was just listening to it on my way, like commuting back and forth. And I listened to that record more than I thought I ever would. And I still kind of do.
What's like one of the big hits? There obviously has to be a big.
Filthy is the lead single.
Okay.
That's a Hayden's going to say a fake.
I got to say, Justin Timberlake, he revitalized his career a lot for me.
I think he definitely did. I will say, and this is like kind of like the larger record, any of that goodwill that he built was more or less destroyed with Man of the Woods. There's so many weird decisions on that record that, first of all, he calls it Man of the Woods, which is, I think, like the joke around like a lot of people on the internet was like, oh, he buys Patagonia once and all of a sudden he's like a rugged outdoorsman. It's not great. But
he was probably wearing Timbaland.
He likely was. I think he is on the record. And it's very like he has like little interludes with Jessica Biel, right? His wife, like doing like really weird spoken. They're still married.
Are they?
Yeah.
Congratulations. I'm sorry. Sorry, guys. I just assumed celebrity couple. It has to be over at this point.
At this point, this date will have already passed. But I do have a bet with my father that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce will be broken up by Halloween.
I agree.
I don't know how real Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel's relationship is, but she was definitely on this record.
If they're still together, that shit's real.
I guess they have a child. I just don't think any celebrities that date or marry, I just don't see them as approaching it as like a lasting agreement.
I would imagine it's an open relationship.
You heard it here. Allegedly. Podcast host Rob McGregor.
That's right.
Justin Timberlake, Jessica Biel relationship open. So you don't seem to think that's a very guilty pleasure, though. You seem relatively unfazed by Justin Timberlake.
No, I don't. I don't take any. Honestly, the question, it really involves who are you talking about this album that you like? It's the person you're talking to. And it's like when you tell me that, I'm like, yeah, I like Justin Timberlake songs. It's fine.
I think in my head, the fact that makes it a guilty pleasure is that my rational side recognizes that it's not just a bad album. That's like a bonkers album. But when things slip into bonkers for me, I'm more likely to still enjoy it.
That's fine. And I like that you internalize it. For me, I'm going to go off of like an external, like snobby musicians society.
Fair.
So mine is Papa Roach Infest.
Oh, hell. I mean, and again, I'm like, guilty what? Let's go.
Exactly. It's fine. But I can see certain musician friends. Oh, like that album's crap. I get it. I'm sure you have to have certain musically inclined friends or not inclined. What's the word I'm looking for?
People with taste.
People with taste, yeah. Who listen to the really good shit. Where it's like, yeah, if you play cut my life into pieces. This is my last reason.
You're missing the best track on that record. My name is Kobe Dick.
Yeah.
Dick, if you're nasty, give it up in a voice that's raspy. Like he rhymed raspy with nasty. It was great.
I love that album. And that is an album that I will listen to this day. Binge, I think, is a great song.
I think the one that we both really love is of Insects and Angels.
That was a you're learning guitar song.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm trying to figure out how to play this because it was that fourth note. And I was like, ooh, my hand is a little awkward trying to still play the bottom because it was a boom bang down 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 bang down. that one was where it's like, oh, my hands are in very non-ergonomically correct scenario. So yeah, that song is great, but Binge is definitely the song off that album that I love that song.
What has Binge go? Why can't I think of it?
That is the behave, little boy. You better sit back down. Yeah, that
it's I don't know. I think that is the only one of theirs, I guess, technically, because I did buy the second record.
I did too.
What is it? Rock and Roll or something?
Yeah, I believe what I think that has a song that I still listen to this.
Barbed Wire is the one I'm thinking of.
No, that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Born with Nothing, Die with Everything, which I think the chorus riff is just badass on that.
I think they're still around, which is crazy to think about.
They are, but they did start going a direction that it's not a guilty pleasure. It's something that I take no pleasure from. So they did go a direction that I wasn't backing it anymore.
I think what I appreciated about them in that first record was, I mean, Last Resort as a single, that was like the single of that record. And that's a pretty, like, suicide songs were definitely like a genre in the 2000s.
Yes.
Like
yes,
certain yes, bands yes. definitely had them. And
and still try to act like, it's like, no, we weren't telling anybody to kill themselves. Like, don't. I love Eminem, but for him to go like, people took me too serious. I'm like, yeah, we were all in junior high.
That's what junior high kids do. Yeah. That's the
they were looking for somebody to look up to.
I think if we have to make a top 10 of like top suicide songs of the 2000s, which we definitely don't have to do.
No,
we don't. I think that Last Resort is up at the top, if not the top.
Yeah.
Possibly. But there I don't you even go. Know what that means.
There you go, Leo. We gave you our guilty pleasures. I'm sure we have a lot more, but those are the ones that
I have. Like, even as we've been talking, I've been thinking of like five more.
That I changed mine actually while we were talking. I had two other ones, and then just as you were talking, I was like, I'm going to go with Infest.
Well, see, you mentioning Papa Roach makes me want to change mine to Puddle of Mud because
no
blurry,
Phil guilty, good. Phil blurry guilty.
Can you take it all the way?
There we go. Welcome there you go, Leo. That's the answer. That's the answer. That's what you were looking for.
Oh Lord, are you happy? Oh my
How
rat.
Dare you compare Puddle of Mud to Papa Roach?
They're swimming in the same waters.
Just because their name starts with a P does not mean that that's they're
right. The harmonics, I think, and blurry. And the way it works, I don't know. I think that one, and I think their first one, which I don't remember the name of that single, that I need to feel you
need like, to feel me.
There's so many of those 2000 bands that I'm weirdly a connoisseur of at this point with that same, it's that Scott Stratt voice, right? I think I was just listening to The Calling. Default is another one. Trapped, right? Do you remember Trapped, Rob?
I do remember Trapped. If you like that, then let's just
close stop. My eyes. My sister Nicole, you know what's up. Her and I listened to Trapped a bunch on our in the truck. They're all cut from the same cloth. Taproot. I could keep going. They're all the same.
I like it.
This is what happens when we record on a Saturday. We're not meant to record on this
two
day.
Episodes we're recording on the wrong day.
This is weird energy. I don't think we can be trusted. All right. Here's the deal. I'm the one who got us into this mess. Yes, and I, to be totally honest, here's the deal. I don't even remember what led me to the Who. Like, I could try to like retrace my steps. It was something during re-listening to Led Zeppelin that second time, because we had to re-record an episode. Yes, I don't know whose fault it was. Who knows? Whose fault?
Lucky. It's Lucky's. Why do you guys got to bring me into this? He said I want to be in this episode.
He's going to get let go soon. I almost imagine.
Lucky, you're in dangerous waters here. Just
the thing is, as I was re-listening to I think it was that first Led Zeppelin record, and it made me think of our conversation about like songwriting. And I've even since then come further to your side of things. I think my initial thing about Led Zeppelin not being as much a songwriter kind of band as just a band. Although I do still think that there's some filler on some of those records where it's more about their ability to jam that makes everything kind of work. But all of that made me think about what other bands that were around the same time, what they were doing. Is that same level of songwriting there? is there like a another band that we could bring into the conversation that could kind of clarify this? And the Who were the first band that came to mind for me?
It wasn't a bad suggestion. This was a very fascinating, I can't say last 2 weeks because we had so many little things that got in the way.
Right, right.
So the past week and 2 days, which I know for everybody else, it's like, oh, that's plenty of time to listen to four albums. Not with how you and I are trying to
not really take it in. But even so, and I think when I mentioned this, my whole intention was not for this to be a Led Zeppelin versus The Who kind of a podcast.
You did say this was going to be kind of part two of our...
Because I do think it's really interesting to kind of put them side by side, but it also at the same time, can I say this? I like The Who more than Led Zeppelin. Like,
no, I think you can't say better than Led Zeppelin. That's incredibly wrong.
I feel that, like, I have to get it out because I feel like every opinion I'm about to say is going to be basically saying that. So I have to say it. They're better than Led Zeppelin.
They're closer to Weezer.
That's crazy.
That's not crazy.
That's crazy of you to say.
It's not crazy.
Listen, okay.
It's not crazy.
This is good. I was afraid we weren't going to have anything to talk about. But to me, this is actually very clear. And just so I can amend this, am I saying that I think that The Who are an incredible band if I was to go back to the 60s and 70s? No. There are other people that I think are...
Like Zeppelin?
No. Like, I would not pick
the Beatles?
Either... I would not pick either of those two bands to listen to on purpose if I was going to be listening to bands
terrible
from the 60s and 70s. Not on purpose.
All right. And you know what? There are people who I hope are listening right now who have just as much passion as you and I just had in that moment. Or there's somebody out there who's listening going like, no, fuck that. Zeppelin's better. And somebody out there going like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? The Who is way better.
I did stumble across, which made me feel a little better at this episode. I stumbled across a discussion forum. It was actually a Led Zeppelin fan site, and they had their own little discussion forum there. And it's actually kind of great to go through because you can tell everyone there by the way that they're typing is like they're all over the age of 50. Like they're all like older baby boomer generation, like
no Led emojis. Zeppelin fans.
No emojis. They're all like really long, drawn out posts. And they're like mentioning like, well, like encyclopedic knowledge, right? Of every, like no one under the age of 50 writes like that, right? On a forum.
Given the fact that you and I are under the age of 50, we will not be talking like that.
And the whole thing was Who versus Led Zeppelin. And then at some point, a contingency of Who fans come into the discussion forum and lay a bunch of what they consider truth bombs about why the Who are better than Led Zeppelin. And at one point, one Led Zeppelin guy went, I don't like The Who because they broke their instruments and that was disrespectful.
I remember you saying
no hint of irony. And I was,
I know by the time Tommy came out, they literally were going like, we have to do something a little different because at that point, they're no longer teenagers. They're no longer like really young and they couldn't really afford to keep smashing their instruments. It turned into a financial faux pas for them.
Rock and roll.
It's rock and roll, but
smash your stuff to poverty, man.
I'm sorry. The Who is definitely the Who sellout is not a ironic title for that album.
I know.
They were writing jingles for Coca-Cola.
Here's my read off of The Who versus Led Zeppelin. And actually, no, let me just stick to The Who. I'm not going to bring in Led Zeppelin.
No, this is part two.
Here's my read on The Who is when I think of like bands that kind of build up to, I mean, they are before punk rock really becomes a thing. Mm-hmm. I know that like guys in the Sex Pistols and stuff were huge Who fans. And that's like a part of like, there is, to me, an interesting relationship between what The Who were doing with even like their big first single, right? My Generation, which is not in this set of four we talked about.
Unfortunately, too. That's my only gripe with you on this is I'm like, man, we're missing some really good songs.
There's some from earlier. I just think this span, because it's also around the same time that Led Zeppelin are coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they are, for me, at least the most interesting, not always in the best way, but these are like really bonkers albums. I've already said the word bonkers as like a possible positive to me.
And they're fairly ahead of Led Zeppelin because Zeppelin starts really gains their ground in 69.
Right. Yeah, and the Who have already established themselves, basically. But I just think of the Who as starting the slightly more anarchic spirit in rock and roll that I have always been drawn to. That, to me, is the part of rock and roll that I've always responded to the most. But also, they have so much vision. And does it always take them? And that's specifically Pete Townsend, right?
Yes.
He's the kind of main songwriting force. And
absolutely.
I think that that is something I've always found really admirable about The Who, even when it gets them into trouble in certain endeavors. But I don't necessarily see that in bands like Led Zeppelin. I appreciate there's like a workmanlike quality to Zeppelin that I really appreciated when we went through their records.
Yeah.
And there's like, am I even saying they're not creative? But I think that The Who were operating at a level that I didn't see other bands trying necessarily to do with their records in particular, right? Not necessarily just song to song, but with their records.
Yeah. Very, very ambitious. They were, I appreciate the fact that they were really striving for the albums to be even bigger than just the individual songs, you know, like a bigger connection, a bigger web that combined all these tunes. And it's something that I figured this was probably going to be the case, but why I'm comparing them to Led Zeppelin, but why I love Led Zeppelin a little more is there's something in me that I've really understood over the last few years. And I've obviously brought it up. Like, lyrics are not quite as, they got to be really shitty for me to go like, oh, this is a bad song, and base that off of the lyrics. But for some reason, and I know it, I can't get the nutrients of the lyrics from The Who because I don't think the music is as good. I think the music is, there's just a lot of recycling within it that I just, compared to Zeppelin, I go like, that's fucking fill it, jam it, do it. Something we kind of left out on the last episode is the idea of improv. Is, I think that's a lost art in songwriting. And so I find that to be more compelling. Whereas, I shouldn't say more compelling, but it just sounds better to me.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. And I think you're right. And this goes back to what we were debating more or less with Led Zeppelin, is at certain points when they're getting into those kind of deeper jams and like those songs where they're really letting things breathe, like how much of that do you attribute to you just like in the moment decision making? But I think, and that's what I said when I was kind of, over time, letting that digest, I totally agree with you that more kind of organic way of like seeing where something goes, that's still got intentionality behind it.
It does. But, and that's where with The Who, there are times where I'm like, this song is asphyxiating. It's just too tight. It's too not breathing.
It's so interesting. I'm so the opposite.
Not all of it. Not all of it, though.
But I think the best versions of The Who, and just to kind of give a quick taste, for me, it's these last two. For anyone who's unfamiliar, we're listening to The Who sell out all the way to Quadrophenia. I think those last two are ones where I at least think they're able to take some of that tightness that I actually appreciate from some of their songs and give it a little more space to breathe and give like the soundscaping, right, and all these different
we're
things,
going to agree a lot things. More than you
I
may
think those
that.
Are well, that's great. I think Quadrophenia, I'll just tell you real quickly, it's not in either of my album categories, but it was the biggest surprise.
Shame.
For me. I really love that record. I thought it was great. It's but really, so I do think that The Who are capable of kind of what you're saying. I'll definitely agree with you that in one album in particular, it's pretty bad to me. And weirdly, it's the album that somehow gets toted around as being one of
all right, let's not give anything away here. Let's just
I'm just enticing. I'm enticing. Yes. Ooh, yes. What's gonna happen?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started with best song. Let's dive
here
into
we go.
This.
Do you want to take the lead or should I take the lead?
I can, you know what? We're out here in the fields and I fight for my meals. I don't need to ask for forgiveness. It's Baba O'Riley.
Not a bad choice.
Is best. And there's others I could go back and forth with. But when and you could also like, I think this could go to so many other categories. I'm certain for other people, this might be overrated. Others might make it underrated because it's so overrated for others. But when I hear Baba O'Riley, It's the synths at the beginning. It's those big power chords. I think that's something that I associate with Who more than any kind of classic rock band. And I could see how it could maybe make some of their stuff feel a little bit more recycled, but their devotion to the power chord and those big, like, just letting it ring.
That song is so, when we talk about the secret sauce, everybody's doing their secret sauce thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, honestly, if I had to narrow it down to one thing, synth is the Who's secret sauce to me. For their best stuff, that's the secret sauce.
Yeah. And they're using it in a way that I think was at the time not done as much, right? To layer with are these like really organic instruments that are getting lifted because of, I mean, the way it opens, and like you said, they let the synth breathe like that. Ooh.
Yeah. I think I shot you a text message when I was talking trash about a particular something from The Who, but I did want, like, I have to say something positive here. And I went, like, Bob O'Reilly is a great album opener.
Yeah.
That is a great way to start an album. And yeah, like with the, like you said, like Jigga Now, it's just like I see Pete Townsend doing the big windmill guitar sweep, you know, and the bass is rocking. Keith Moon is getting down, solid, very good drummer. I think you might like him a little more than me.
I don't
dislike him.
This might be the time that I say this. Keith Moon is, in terms of rock and roll drummers, he is near the top for me, which is, I think there's a lot of debate around, like I know John Bonham is the one people.
I was going to say, can we do this?
Here's the sheet as I understand it, right? Which is John Bonham. Oh, it's because he never played fills. Like, he just goes to the song. He plays fills, but he's not like, I was overly. Say,
who the hell says he doesn't play fills?
That's more.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think he is known to be someone who holds back when he's meant to.
And he creates like an unorthodoxy behind the backbeat.
I could see it. Yeah. And I did really like, I mean, we talked about like rock and roll, right? These other ones where I think he's so subtly brilliant in some of those songs that it's like really cool. I wish they would let him play more. Yeah. Like,
I think. Well, and that's the thing for me with Keith Moon, even though, again, great drummer, I think it's just like, okay, yeah, you, if you don't have toms, you're not a good drummer.
Oh, I love it. I think, and that's where
Not talking shit. I'm just saying he needs the toms. He's going to go.
Of course he
firing
does.
Away at it.
Michelangelo needed paints. Like, I don't know.
He could maybe have a few less colors and still make something beautiful.
That's stupid. There's no way.
Of course there's a way. Of course it makes sense.
Keith Moon is a poet. He's not a musician. He's a poet when he plays drums. He's so expressive. And I think the other best kinds of drummers that have these like really kind of recognizable grooves that they fall into, I can tell that it's Keith Moon playing, because like with all of those fills, like he is the Michelangelo of fills. Like, I don't think there's a drummer who plays better fills that I've heard in terms of.
From that exact same era, I have somebody who's popping into my head, and I think you know who it is.
Stop.
Ringo, baby.
I think when you have a band like The Who, what gave them that same kind of like anarchic quality that I'm talking about, it had to be Keith Moon. Like, he's what makes them punk rock. It's not Pete Townsend. It's not them breaking their instruments. It's Keith Moon in the way that he played.
You beat me before I could say it. I'm like, what? Because he blows up his drum set?
No, it's.
Was that on Ed Sullivan?
I
think it was.
He knocked himself out. I mean, that's I think Keith Moon as a person, maybe there's some dodgy stuff there, but from a young age, I was obsessed
the whole band besides Entwistle. He seems pretty chill. But going back to Bob O'Reilly, I think that song's great because of, also, this might surprise you, Colton, the lyrical element to it.
Oh, yeah.
I usually don't get the nutrients of the lyrics. You know, I usually just get the fat of the song, you know, like the bad. Do you like, I'm trying to communicate to Colton through food.
That's fine. I mean, I ate a while ago, so I'm not quite as hungry as I usually am.
But I love the fact that they're talking about, like, from my understanding, it's about Woodstock, right?
That's where Townsend got the Teenage Wasteland. I don't know if it was Woodstock specifically. It might have been another festival.
It could have been Monterey, but I think it was Woodstock.
Yeah,
was what they were specifically writing about.
Well, here's the tricky thing with that is it's also the whole thing is meant to also be about what is it, Lifehouse, like that concept record that All of Who's Next is basically a part of, which thank God.
Honestly, all of everything. They kind of drove me a little crazy. We'll get into this deeper when we start talking about albums, but they drove me a little crazy with it. It's like, okay, guys, write a song.
But they did. When Townsend comes in, and I actually, here's my other, I'm dropping all these Who hot takes right at the top. Roger Daltrey, I'm like not always super into the way that he sings.
I agree.
I think he gets rough, and sometimes, like, I think when he really wants to let it fly and he gets that rasp, it can be great. I think
that dude can scream.
He can scream.
Oh man, he's like the first installment of what, like, it's him and Paul McCartney. Where when I think of like the first guys to scream and do something that it is more, you know, within our generation, big thing.
There's something I love about that, like, quiver, that real, like, vulnerability in Pete Townsend's voice. That's the best part of it. That's what makes that song, to me, at another level.
It's beautiful. Yeah, man. That
Teenage Wasteland. Ooh, he lets it break.
Great song. That's a great choice. Great, great choice. And it was very, I almost had that on my list. I don't know if this annoys the hell out of you or if it doesn't.
You need to listen to it?
No. I know Bob O'Reilly. Well, I know all of them, but this one, that one I'm very familiar with. But for best song, I have four different songs, and Bob O'Reilly was the first. I'm not going to dive into him.
Okay.
But today was when I just went like, no, this is the best. Love Rain Over Me. Or Lucky, help me with this. It's Love Rain Over Me. Thank you. That song, man. Rain on me. And we talked about it, like his screams in it were just big flipping moments. And it is a song where I'm like, storyline be damned. That song stands alone as a beautiful, beautiful, freaking impactful song.
Yeah,
that was just the one. It's like, okay, that one. I'm putting up my hands like I'm in church.
I could talk about this with you at any point in this podcast. We might as well do it now because we could wait till the records, but I think we're gonna have to bring this up at different points. Yeah. I do have some frustration like you where all of these records, pretty much even before this, right? I think it's like A Quick One While He's Away, right? Is their first true concept record.
Yeah, yeah.
And then from there on out, that's just basically what Pete Townsend does. Like every record is another opera, right? And even the fact that like the Who sell out, they said, well, we didn't even mean really for it to be a concept record until our photo shoot. And after that, we were like, oh, let's kind of put this whole concept.
Let's title certain songs based off of the photos that we took.
Right.
Yeah. But if I'm not mistaken, that was at the suggestion. They had their two managers. Their names are their Stamp.
Oh, I won't remember them.
I can't remember the other guy who was a lot more impactful, but they always said that these guys were like the behind the scenes working of the Who.
I think they told them the name of the record.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And just went like, we should do like a pirate radio thing for that particular album that you just talked about,
which I guess I'm also like, well, I guess if you're at that level and you're still like, sure, whatever, like that's something I can kind of, but I do see Pete Townsend from there on. That's like his thing. He has to do for himself. Like he has to have, and funny enough, I think Claudio Sanchez, we're talking about like talk about another band where they have to have a story. I actually think if he were asked to just write a song, like during that span of time, because he can't think about it in terms of a larger narrative, it's like not his way into it. And I think the best songs they have on these records have nothing to do with the fact that they're part of a story.
Yeah.
And people who think so, I just here's a bridge I'd like to sell you. That's crazy. There's
yeah.
nothing about those stories that are good.
And that's what I love about Love Ran Over Me, is it just, every time it hits the chorus, let's let it play for a second here. And I love the fact that, like, the synth element to it is actually, you know, the song Quadrophenia is already, it already hints that that's coming up again. But that's the beauty behind that song Quadrophenia as well. Or it kind of hints at the rest of the album.
Oh, yeah. Like, and it's like they have those reoccurring, 'cause I think each band member basically has a kind of theme that's mm-hmm. attached to them, right? That pops up at different points.
Oh, but for sure. That was something that I do. Just anyway, yeah. So there you go, everybody. Love Ran Over Me. That's my favorite song. But that's also something that I really dig about The Who. What you just said is I love the fact that everybody has their identity. Mm-hmm. That's a band that really, for as much as I talk crap about the fact that they have to, you know, make these, you know, big rock opera things, everybody knows who they are in the band.
Yeah, it's, and I think that's, and I'm saying this a lot with The Who, but I think that's something that is, can lead them to be their best selves. And I think at the worst times, that's when they kind of slide into those old, well, we'll just do this again. That's maybe where they get into trouble.
I agree.
But all right. Well,
great choices. I think both of those are great choices.
And that's it. That's the episode. We'll be done. The Who are better.
We'll see
than
you
like
guys next week. We got Joe Ziegler and Matt. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Do you want to do your worst song first?
Yeah, I'll get it out of the way. This, for as much as I was poking fun of them throughout, I really only could settle on one. Give me a second.
If it's the same one I picked, I'm going to scream. Okay, I'm getting
really don't, excited. I'm not sure that we're going to have the same. I doubt it. I'll be pretty stunned.
When I tell you why mine is the worst, you're going to be so upset. This might end our friendship, but I'm okay. Ready for that.
I say Armenia, but they don't pronounce it the same way. But it's Armenia City in the Sky. Way to rip off the Beatles, guys.
Okay, here's where. Oh no, you go. I'm sorry. I'm like ready to go in. You go.
I'm sorry. First of all, like you literally are doing the pitch heightening for the voice that they do in Lucy in the Sky, by
which
the
is off of which album?
That's off of
Sgt. Pepper.
Sgt. Right? Pepper's, yeah.
Which came out after the Who sell out, did it not?
I thought it came out before.
Let's do this. Let's check this. That's part of the controversy that I came across.
Mm-hmm.
Let me do this. Let me check. Released May 1967 is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Band. Sell out. They released the same year. They're both released in 1967.
All right, but who was first?
Pete Townsend. I mean, the release date's not when it was written. Pete Townsend has been interviewed saying,
"What was the release date?"
Here's the thing. Pete Townsend has an interview, several, where he says that Paul McCartney would come up to him like after the Who put out A Quick One While We're Away, mm-hmm. which was like you know, their first big concept record. And yeah. Paul McCartney said, "Oh, we've been listening to that record a lot. It's been really inspiring us. We want to try to do something like that for our next record." Yeah. And he says, and then they wrote Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Band. So,
well, they also contributed that to Pet Sounds as well.
Right. Well, but the idea though is that the Who is what actually drove the Beatles to want to write more of a concept record. And because Pete Townsend said they were going to do another, or that when the Who sellout came out, everyone was like, "Oh, it's like Sgt. Pepper's," and he was like, "No, it's the opposite. That they're the ones who inspired the Beatles."
Yeah, it's not the case, but I mean, it's fine.
That's fine.
I mean, if you listen to John Entwistle, like he and Paul McCartney, you could just switch bands and it'd be the same bass player and same vocalist. It's incredible. But I think that Paul McCartney had been around longer. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to.
Oh, I'm fine with this. Like,
yeah, here's I'm not the thing. Going to bow down on this.
This album, I don't like. This is not my favorite album. But
yeah.
I'll just go ahead and say my least favorite song is because it reminds me of, like, and not, I'm not even going to just point out just the Beatles. This is like total, like, psychedelic British humor that mm-hmm. this is really lost on me. And I know it's also at the time somewhat more biting satire, but mm-hmm. Silas Stingy is a really, really upsetting song. Like, that song bothered me. Like, it makes feel gross.
The very first song that I have written down and underrated.
How? Explain why.
I dug the vibe. To me, it reminded me more of Pink Floyd, early day Pink Floyd.
I think that, like, and this is like kind of, there's a wide range of like old British humor I could mention here that a lot of people mm-hmm. would probably get very upset about. It's like when you really watch Monty Python, like really watch it, like not just mm-hmm. say that you like to watch it, but like watch like 45 minutes and I start to go crazy. Like my brain starts to like fray at the nerve endings and I go, I can't watch this for another
Am I going to upset you with me saying that Monty Python and the Holy Grail is probably my favorite comedy of all time?
I mean, I've seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I liked it.
I love
it. But when I watch that whole movie, mm-hmm. I'm kind of tired.
I can be fair. I don't know if I would like it as much if I saw it for the first time today.
The whole thing, I want to listen to it again so I can get a good...
Let's do it.
Once upon a time there lived an old miser man by the name of Silas Stingy. He carried all his money in a little black box,
which was heavy as a rock with a big padlock. All the little kids would shout when Silas was about.
Money, 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 man, money, money, bags. There goes Mingy Stingy, there goes Mingy Stingy.
I'm getting upset just listening to it again. It reminded me of the Beatles, and that's why I didn't like it. Are you ready? Because that's what I was going to say. It reminded me too much of like a Beatles-esque kind of, ooh, this is our satire.
How the fuck does this remind you of the Beatles? That sounds nothing like the Beatles.
It's the whole thing about can't even right now.
Lucky, do you mind stepping in here, Lucky? And
these older bands that did this like societal critique, and like I'm talking British satire kind of rock and roll.
I'm not a big fan of it either, Colton.
How do we criticize like capitalism and like kind of miser like people? Money, 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 man. Here comes Mingy Stingy.
I got nothing against. I'm sorry, Colton. Lucky, I got nothing against the Brits when it comes to this. Like, that's just how they talk. That's their lingo.
I think that it just sounds like a stupid person made it. That's what I'm trying to express.
Okay, my only real clap back on that
is
this song sounds nothing like any Beatles song to me.
That's fair. I mean, it was like a very visceral, like, ugh.
Early day Pink Floyd. That's what you're hearing when it comes to this.
That's fair.
Which I think would actually technically be The Who is earlier. I can't remember the exact dates, but this sounds nothing like the Beatles, and that's fine. I kind of like it, but
I respect your opinion that it doesn't. That's where I
and I'm more upset with you because I'm just going like, don't lump the Beatles in on this shit.
I told you the reason
don't
I would
dislike
like this
that
is...
song because of the Beatles.
To be fair, it's not like the Beatles exist and I don't like this song. I don't like the song all on its own. The organ is
there
stupid. But it also reminds me of, and I'm pointing out the Beatles because I know it's going to upset you, but also it's that whole, all the British bands are a part of that. They're all lumped in. They all got blood on their hands.
No, here's nobody can see my physical gesture here, but here's all the British bands down here. Here's the Beatles up here, Colton.
I just see you waving your hand around. It's all one big old.
Here's the Beatles up here with a nice middle finger going like, Colton,
the thumbs up. That's nice to me.
Yeah.
Stop waving your uninjured thumb in my face. How dare you? Oh, Lord. All right. Underrated. I'll go ahead and get us rolling here. My underrated is I've Had Enough off of Quadrophenia.
That's really good.
I think that when it goes into that kind of more folky bluegrass kind of a like yeah. a little like breakdown, and the lyrics too, like I really think, if I'm being honest, that is of those four the strongest lyrical record they have. It's Quadrophenia.
I wholeheartedly agree.
And
I really don't like the fact that we're giving away. Well, actually, you know, screw it. We've talked a lot in this episode, so we have to do some time.
Amazingly, we have. Yeah. I didn't think this would be this long.
Same here.
Is that your favorite record, Quadrophenia?
Let's get it out of the way.
Is it?
That is.
It's not mine, but that's right. That's
well. Then no, everybody. Let's wait till we get there.
If it feels like it was, that's just because I'm being very guarded with my emotions. But I really do. In that record, there's so many ones that I really like, but I think that one changes the soundscape by going into that more kind of bluegrassy kind of a breakdown. That it's like one of the songs where in that first go where everything starts to kind of blend together. It stands out the most. And that whole I've had enough as like that anaphora, right? Anaphora, technically. That repetition, it works so well. And everything that comes after it, like it's all about like teenage angst. Like that's something I've always really appreciated about The Who is their number one loyalty when they're writing all of these records, these four in particular. But even before that, they're a band that really cares about what it's like to be young. That's something that I...
Yeah, Pete Townsend has an obsession with people who are young.
It's, but I think that that is...
No laughter behind that?
I mean, that's a good thing.
Okay, right, I'm sorry, Pete. You defended yourself, so you apparently were exonerated.
Wait, I don't even know which one you're talking... What are you talking about?
The child pornography thing.
Oh, I missed that.
Well, let's not dive into it. we've already done enough of that. With this podcast. Let's.
I think from now on, every time we do a band or a songwriter, I have to make that a part of my research. I don't, and then I totally miss it. Especially when we're getting into older bands. That's like that's basically all of them.
Dance. But yeah, no, I've had enough. That's solid. That's a good choice.
No, yo. All right, underrated Rob.
I have a lot written here. Silas Stingy was on there, as I made mention of. The Punk and the Godfather is really badass.
Yeah.
That was one that took me by surprise. And it's so involved with the storyline, but man, I loved hearing just about like Jimmy coming to like the old leader of his gang, and that dude's like an usher or something like that.
I do want to say this, and maybe this is like just a build up to what we're going to be talking about in a second with your best record, but I do think that them having that record as a concept record, I can see how it allows some of those songs, even though it's like a technically like a narrative song, quote unquote, it gives that song kind of an emotional charge that it might not have otherwise, at least when it comes to them writing it. So like that, like Punk and the Godfather, for example, like there's a lot of like narrative aspects to it, but there that storytelling quality of the lyrics works out then, right?
Yeah, I think you're right to where it does have, he almost has a personality behind his voice in which he's playing the character. Mm-hmm. I think that song is that much cooler, but it does fit into what you're saying to where this is my favorite album because for all their attempts at making a rock opera, this one I'm going, at least it's, still feels like songs to me. It doesn't feel quite as choppy, and the overall focus is to
things blend back into one another, right?
Yeah.
I totally get that. Let's save it because I want to talk about Quadrophenia with you a little bit more in relation to Tommy. We could go into overrated net first.
Mm-hmm.
My overrated is Beyond Blue Eyes.
Beyond, huh? I never heard Beyond
Behind.
Blue
oh
Eyes.
My God. See? Behind Blue Eyes. Otherwise known as It's Really Hard to Be Aryan.
It's
aged the worst, I think, but it's also.
I will concede that was also going to be my choice.
I almost feel bad because there's another reason why Behind Blue Eyes is overrated for me. And I think you could probably guess. There's a band that covered Behind Blue Eyes.
Let me guess. Is it L-I-M? P.
Discover. That, listener, here's the thing. If you want to give
do
yourself...
Do not let...
Go yes, ahead. If you want to give yourself an afternoon of just total hilarity, if we're talking about, like, the craft of songwriting and how much work it takes, if you want to see the opposite of what songwriting should look like, look up on YouTube. I'm not even aware if it's there or not. It has to be there. It's like a behind the album, right? Is that what it is, Rob? Behind when Limp Bizkit did that MTV behind the scenes thing
after they lost Wes Borland.
Right, they lost Wes Borland. They were trying to write a record. They scrapped the record, and then they go back to rewrite again. And they're doing a cover of Behind Blue Eyes, and I believe it was for the film Gothica, which it's like a whole bunch of stuff that no one cares about anymore. But
except for Golden and I. Bring it back. Let's bring it back.
There's a clip of Fred Durst, DJ Lethal. All these guys are in the studio. They're listening to it. And the conversation runs around the line of like, oh, it's missing something. It's missing. And it's like a terrible cover of what is I think is a lukewarm Who song anyway. Mm-hmm. And then is it DJ Lethal who's like, wait, I got it.
I got it.
L-I-M-P. Discover. Discover. Like he puts it... Listener, the amount of joy and like enthusiasm that comes out of that room when he does it, and they all just think we've done it, we've cracked it,
we found it, we found the missing link to this song, the secret sauce, if you will,
the secret sauce. Like they are so excited that they were able to spell the first part of their band name with Discover after.
I just picture that, like they cut out the scene where it's all of them like, how do we spell biscuit again?
They could, because they're like LIMPBIZKIT. It just doesn't work.
It might have worked if they spelled biscuit,
but like actual biscuit, not.
Yeah. We don't have to dance that dance, but yes, this song I feel very much so the same. And to me, it's really, I think when they hit the upbeat section of the song, I'm talking about the Who's version now, everybody.
Yeah.
When they hit that upbeat section of the song, I'm like, unnecessary. This song is supposed to be soft. And then there's just this little segment like, and everybody dance and we're going to be a little bit bigger. And no, this song, I felt like the song was supposed to be about being a depressed Aryan.
it's hard to not think it's like, you're fine.
Yeah,
you're fine.
I've always had that same feeling to where it's like, no, a lot of people know what it's like.
Yes, it's a whole swath of
society.
The world is never going to be the same because people with blue eyes got really into it.
But it is supposed to be a song about like Roger Daltrey just talking about how he has this anger built up inside of him, and that. Fine.
There's something about like, I think the target, the purpose of the song that I appreciate, and it's like a bunch of ideas that I think almost work, but they do versions of that better, I think. Otherwise they don't. That song is off the record. That record to me is like so much better, almost perfect.
Not far off, I agree. But but just to switch it up, I'll say Pinball Wizard.
Overrated. What's your deal, song? Man, what's your problem with Tommy? Let's have this out. What is your problem with Tommy?
It's not even Tommy. It's Pinball Wizard. Like, I think a lot of people go back and go like, Pinball Wizard's a great song. Give me more than just the opener. And past that, nobody's going to remember the damn song. You know, I think the song opens incredibly. And again, I think might as well go into our cliche know your rights statements.
Overrated does not mean bad song.
Exactly.
Yeah.
During it's just so... Mine was going to be Behind Blue Eyes or Beyond Blue Eyes.
And, Beyond Blue. That's my version of it.
Beyond. I decided to go Beyond Blue Eyes and choose Pinball Wizard. But it's not a terrible song, but I just think that's one that I'm like, really? Let's not hang our hat on that song. Not as good as the beginning.
Such a supple wrist.
But that also is just, we will get into Tommy, don't worry.
You're worrying me about this. I have to say, maybe part of it too is like when you think of Tommy, like I think of the film, which I found when I was younger. We're talking about like your introduction to Led Zeppelin when you were little. Mm-hmm. The Who were one of those only real like classic rock bands I discovered on my own. Like nobody, like it was like, Colton, you got to listen to The Who. Like, I think my parents had Tommy on vinyl that I probably listened to, but I only listened to it after I saw the film on cable. And the film was, if no one's seen the movie Tommy, like, I guess I want to say watch it. It's a trip. It is. Have you seen it, Rob?
Long time ago. I have seen it. But I do remember it being a trip. And at the age I was at, I was just like, no, like, me and the Backstreet Boys just don't agree with it.
It's of an age where, like, the surrealness of, like, all of these weird kind of clips and the way that the songs are bleeding into each other. It was actually, I think, when I first saw it, really upsetting for, like, as young as I was.
Yeah. And,
but it's also, like, the kind of upsetting where after I was like, I want to do that again. Like, where is that going to be on again? I want to watch it. And when Elton John comes on and sings Pinball Wizard, that's cool. But I'll seat it. I'll seat of that on that record. It's not one that I totally need all the time. I'm like way over. I keep like coming and say, oh, my overrated. I've done this already. Good Lord.
And I'm the one with multiple choices.
Yeah. We're there.
I think we are there. So fuck it.
We can finally say
worst album is Tommy for me.
Untrue.
Now, just hear me out. I think that exactly what you said fits into why I don't like Tommy as much, because I'm thinking more from a sonic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea that there has to be a film to make me appreciate it more.
I guess when I was saying that,
I shouldn't say that that's exactly what happened, but it's like, I think that gave it a lot more.
We've had the same kind of critique with other concept records. I think we both had the same idea with the Decemberists, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, what's the name of that album?
You know, I was trying to think of it earlier today and I was hoping you were going to remember it.
The Hazards of Love.
Hazards of Love, yeah.
Where I think we both were like, yeah, there's some tracks on that record that we really like, but overall it's far too let's put on a play.
Exactly. I'd rather see the play than just put on headphones and listen to this.
Let's take a beat there for a sec, because this is, I think there's a lot of different genres that people might be trying to think, like, what we're talking about. There's a difference between a concept record, musical, and a rock opera.
The first and third of those I actually lump very much so together, but
I think the idea of a concept record is, there are ideas of like I would actually say the Who Sell Out is a concept record, a very loose one, right? Mm-hmm. It's like barely one, but
yeah, it's not really a storyline.
Right. Like an album where there's some kind of, I can think a great example is the 13th step, right? A perfect circle.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah. That is it's tied to one concept, right? Recovery, addiction.
Yeah,
particular
theme. Yeah.
Right. But it's not necessarily, it's not like, God, can you imagine if they had like a character like, oh, Tommy addict with like little interludes with him talking to his therapist. Can you imagine?
I actually love the idea of Tommy Attic. I want to make that guy.
I spoke that into the world and now I feel bad. Is that our next character? No.
I wish I was better at impressions.
He would be. Rob's eyes lit up like Christmas, everybody. But so rock opera.
I remember my childhood buddy, Tommy. You brought it right back into my brain. How could I have forgotten about him? Tommy Attic. That's what we called him.
Are we right about this, Rob? Is Tommy the first true rock opera? Is that
it's not the first true rock opera. From what I've looked up, there are things that would be classified as rock operas, but from my understanding, Tommy is the first utilization of that term.
Okay. I think, and we said this over text, I totally agree with you that the quote unquote rock opera as a genre of album is flawed. Why is it flawed?
Probably because the name Jimmy seems to come up all the damn time.
Well, now St. Jimmy. See, doesn't Green Day... American Idiot is a little bit worse than when we were talking about it before. I want to go back to Green Day and downgrade my opinion of American Idiot.
Just to get this out of the way, not only is Quadrophenia my favorite by The Who, it's probably my favorite rock opera album.
It's a really good example of it. And by the way, I don't necessarily think rock operas overall are very conducive to good records. Like the fact that Quadrophenia is maybe one of the better ones, I think Tommy is, I think maybe this is the reason why it's also a worse one for you, I think Tommy is a great example of rock opera. If someone was like, what's a rock opera? I would show them Tommy. I wouldn't show them Quadrophenia.
Yeah. And what did you say in the text? Oh, rock operas are fundamentally ridiculous and very good. Ha ha. And I responded with, based off of the fact that they coined the phrase, they are ridiculous and stuff. I left out very good. But honestly, and you know what? Upon listening to it a little bit more, Tommy started sinking in a little better, but it's just so over the top. And I'm like, I just feel like there's supposed to be a visual. It's the same thing with Hazards of Love. It was.
I think that it's hard to like divorce it from the visuals that most people probably associate with it. When I look at the track listing and like, I think, okay, let's look at just, I'm not going to go through every single track. I promise. That would be insane.
Yes.
Overture and Underture. Underture is too long. Underture is crazy. Like 5 minutes into Underture, I'm like, let's be churred. We're churred at this point.
It's funny you mentioned churred. And I was like, Underture. Really clever, guys.
But when I start with like 1921, and I love the Hawker, Christmas is great.
Christmas is great. And that's a standalone to me. That even though it does fit within the storyline, the idea of just like, okay, what becomes of the deaf, dumb, and blind kid who can't hear the message of Jesus?
Yeah.
I was like, that's brilliant.
And I think that's the thing maybe where Tommy is always going to have a special place in my heart. I was talking before about how, which now feels a little creepy for me to say, but I've always felt like in these four records, there's just something about like the need to talk about what it means to be young. And I think Quadrophenia is also a great record because of that. It's about like the ways that young people try to identify themselves, right? And try to like make sense of like, what am I? Am I a mod? Am I a punk? Yeah. And Tommy, it's like someone who's like locked in themselves, right? And I think the best songs tap into that. It's not necessarily because it's like, oh, he's getting like molested by his uncle in this song.
It is fascinating, but my issue with Tommy is I do think the storyline is bonkers, to go with what you said.
Bonkers.
The fact at the end that he's running a cult, I'm like, how did we get here?
Because people try to take enlightenment and commodify it. I love it.
I love
that that's what happens, and then that the whole thing disintegrates.
I know it, but there's just sometimes where at the end of a story, it feels like it's like we're at the end. We gotta
go.
Let's get it finished. We gotta finish it out.
I feel the future. I will say very quickly that like the kind of going back to what I think they get right on Quadrophenia, when it's like the kind of the Tommy theme, see me, hear me.
Yeah.
Watch me. Like that is, I love it. It's hard for me to not get like when it gets put in at different points of it. I think it's great.
I don't dislike it, but it does. It would have been better to me if it was a little more Helen Keller rather than it was, what's the word I'm looking for? Psychosomatic. And I was like, yeah, that's okay. So he just shut off. And it's like, that's just a little asshole kid. And he ends off running a cult later on. I don't know.
Rob's hot take on Tommy the character.
Tommy is just like, quit ignoring your fucking parents here, even though the parents did do something horrible in front of whatever.
By the way, Sally Simpson is great. That's a good track. All right. In the movie, she's like married to a little Frankenstein. And I remember when I was little, that was like really frightening to me. There you go.
So you loved it.
And so I love things that frighten me. I love Laird.
you love Halloween. All right. What's your least favorite album?
Yeah. The Who Sell Out is. And I wasn't expecting. I was actually excited to listen to this record because I never really heard it. And I kept reading. This is where I'll put this dime in. I was trying to do a little more research on like the kind of larger like critical opinion of The Who, because like you were saying with Zeppelin, right? Where I think initial reaction to Led Zeppelin was not super favorable, right?
Yeah.
Like, and they've like
for you
grown.
Yeah.
You were even like Rolling Stone. You.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
I mean, yeah, like they weren't of like those bands that were out at the time. Zeppelin wasn't the band that was getting all the like critical adulation.
Yeah, from critics.
Yeah, from critics specifically.
Yeah.
To go back to it now, I feel like that has shifted because I think The Who were getting a lot more of that like positive critical reaction. Pitchfork, by the way, Pitchfork, by no means do I consider them to be like a music critic site of record at all. But I'm always curious about their opinion on certain things, because either I think sometimes they get things really correct and I'm excited, and other times I'm like, God, they all are like they've never written a song in their lives. They've just told people to listen to things. But they have like top 200 records of the 60s. So what do you think was number one, first of all, from Pitchfork, from the 60s?
From the 60s, Sgt. Pepper's?
No, it's not the Beatles. Beatles, I think, were number two or number three.
Give me a small hint.
Andy Warhol.
Oh, Andy Warhol is...
Tiny boots of leather. Boom, boom.
That's not
Velvet Underground.
That was the...
Number one.
Way to go, guys. Way to go.
And I get that, like, amongst all of those Who records from the 60s specifically, Led Zeppelin was in there a few times. I believe two and one were in there at different points. Well, they only had one.
Those are the only two from the 60s.
But the fact that both of them are on there, I didn't think two was that great. But the Who Sell Out was the only Who record on that, which I found crazy.
What year did Tommy come out?
Tommy was 69.
69? Yeah, if it has to go between those two, I would say that just off of the legacy alone, you got to give Tommy over the Who Sell Out.
I think the Who Sell Out to me...
my generation should have been.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if you're going to do an earlier Who, do a good... Like, I don't find... There are certain songs on the Who Sell Out that, like, I can see for Miles, for example.
Yeah.
I can get into, but overall, it feels really goofy in a way that, like, we're talking about getting distracted by a concept. Mm-hmm. Like, all of those, like, ew, pigeon stuffing.
The little commercials in between. It's really fascinating because this is something I was going to bring up because I accused you so much of it. Where it's like, it's modern ears for us. We get the hindsight as opposed to actually having been there and it happened.
I think the thing, though, is like we're talking about modern ears, and I totally get that there's an element of, like, I just already called out, like, British humor, right, from like 60s or 70s that is like very zany, kind of goofy. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing is, like, there was really smart, cool satire and political criticism happening in the 60s.
By the Beatles. Like, I agree, dude. Right.
There was like smart.
I'm sorry. I could see that's the most painful look I've ever seen on Colton's face from me mentioning the Beatles. I'm sorry. I got to stop.
Just like, if we're talking about, like, we're fine. But if we're talking about, like, what I consider to be really humorous, cool critiques of, like, capitalism and consumerism. Mm-hmm. Like, I just had to look up to remind myself. The Crying of Lot 49, which is a novel, right, by Thomas Pynchon. And if you've never read it, people, I think it's really great. Very surreal. It's like a great work of postmodernism to teach. It's also super weird and hard to read, I think, at certain points, but super funny. And it's got all these different, like, nods to the 60s, nods to, like, counterculture, right, and these things. And when I think of them, I'm like, yeah, these amazing authors and these amazing poets and, like, other songwriters are around. When I listen to, like, the Who Sell Out, I'm like, it's hard for me to even put myself back into that period and not see it as, like, really rote, like, commercials.
Yeah, well, because it's supposed to be like pirate radio, right? Which was a big thing, like FM. FM was a big deal because, like, you could have this music, like, to where all you have to do is just tune into the right frequency and you can have unauthorized music sink into your radio. So it's... I think you're right. I don't think it's the best artistic expression of the times, but it was one of the more popular ones, and they were big on being popular. And like I said, they were writing Coke jingles, so they have people behind them.
I think so. Yeah, your narrative it is that was Zeppelin like the more, like,
honestly, if you know what band I'm going to go into, like, when we're talking about that,
let's time pretend that the Beatles don't exist at this point. Tell me that Zeppelin.
They don't exist at this point.
People, I want to make something clear. When Rob and I just talk, like, without mics going, he does not talk about the Beatles as much.
No, this is definitely turned into a bit. I'm sorry,
I need to point that out just slightly.
I do adore the Beatles, but I have turned this into kind of like, I'm trying to win over the audience.
Oh, they're on your side. I don't think a lot of people are listening to this going, yeah, drag the Beatles. And like, I'm not even trying to drag the Beatles.
No, I am.
It's hard.
All right. Excellent points, though. I think that was a really good conversation, especially just on the topic of the 60s and British 60s at the time. Because I think something we'd left out even talking about Zeppelin is the fact that, I mean, when we're talking about 60s rock bands, it's like this is 20 years after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still a lot of recovery going on, and just the impact of rock and roll at the times. It's like I can only imagine going through it on that level. I mean, we're both American, so we're isolated. We don't have like the war was being fought on our land.
And probably the band that you'll be happy about this. The band that captures that better than either of those two is Pink Floyd. No,
I think I'm on your side with that.
Yeah,
so, especially with their social commentary, I think they execute the best.
So let's go to our best records. I think
let's go to your best record.
Yeah, well, we've talked about Quadrophenia, but I will just quickly say with Quadrophenia, I know we mentioned it, but I thought also it was a really pleasant surprise to me, and it was close. I listened to it again this morning, and I was like, is it better to me? The reason it isn't is funny enough because my favorite one is not a concept record. And for that alone, I think it's Who's Next is my
favorite. It was going to be,
and then it wasn't. And I think in my head, I was like, if I'm in Pete Townsend's camp, that's how every other record gets made now. I let him write it as a concept record because there's something that he needs.
Yeah.
He needs some vision in his head to capture these songs, to give these like really specific little details and things. Like, because here's the thing, like the track on Quadrophenia that solidified to me that Who's Next has to be my favorite is, what is it? I have to look it up now.
I'm not cutting this.
It's Bellboy. When Keith Moon talks in that Cockney accent.
I know.
They can't help themselves.
It's very humorous, and it's very like the Monty Python type of, but it's playing the character. I think it's better executed than Tommy, to me at least.
But then there's the thing is,
I know I'm a broken record saying,
but when I think about what I'm looking for in like this amazing record I can go back to, I think Who's Next, because they allow these songs, even though they were maybe written for another purpose, and like I've looked into how like certain songs are meant to have like certain aspects of their story. I'm so happy. I know this is like Pete Townsend's greatest shame. It's like that record, was it Lifehouse?
It was the failed like big picture that combines all of them.
Did the band Lifehouse take their name from that failed concept record? Can we confirm that?
I think we just introduced some Who listeners to the band Lifehouse.
Check out Lifehouse. I'm certain you're going to love them.
Oh, it's going to be the best thing you've ever heard. but I have no idea as far as that question goes. But
that's fair.
But I agree, because I'm pretty sure that they actually started recording this, and then somebody, one of their management said, "No, this isn't working. Let's go and start it from scratch again." And that's what kind of turned it into an album that's more again the independent songs. You know, that it's still part of the whole, but
it's such a tighter record to me. Like, so Bob O'Reilly, we've talked about Bargain, which once you remove it from every car commercial,
it is the Who's Bargain and a whole bunch of Fleetwood Mac songs.
Yeah. Yep.
It's unfortunate that these songs had to run into that, because Bargain is a good song.
Yeah.
But every time I hear call it a bargain, and it's like, and there's a truck driving across the screen going over a difficult terrain.
And don't you think it's funny that it's like those songs they're never used with the intended purpose, right? Because like, it's like, oh, to like sell, because it says the word bargain, and it's got such a different.
Oh, yeah. It's Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen being used by Ronald Reagan.
Like, Love Ain't for Keeping, the song is over. The only, two songs on this record that bother me. One is My Wife.
I kind of like it. Even though he does sound, again, it's the Paul McCartney voice where I'm like, I hear.
I think overall, my larger theorem with like bands and songwriting is, and I think Connor Oberst did this with the Mystic Valley Band, where they're like, let's let everybody sing. and the mm-hmm. and Weezer did this. It's like, let's let everybody have a hand at the like this, the lyric writing. When does that work? Like 0 out of 0, like 100 times?
I think. Let's see. Weezer nailed it once.
No, the what is that? The Come Greatest on. Man. No, I know that was like one of your underrated songs on Weezer.
Yeah, I know, but the name's escaping me too.
Which clearly means it's this amazing.
No, that's not what it means. That's not what it means. It just means I have a bad memory.
But I it's fine.
I think there was a discussion. It was either Entwistle or it was Townsend talking about how different their writing approaches were. Or it's very Lennon McCartney-esque, where it's like one likes to be a little more whimsical, the other one likes to be very like deep and spiritual and thoughtful. Entwistle just kind of like, my wife has got a little bit of that goofiness to it.
I think my wife is a better version of what they were probably trying to go for with a lot of the Who sell out. So I give mm-hmm. them that. Behind Blue Eyes I've already talked about. But the song I always forgot about that I was like, God, this is such a good song, is Goin' Mobile. I freaking love Goin' Mobile.
Great. That song's great. That guitar and I line.
Killer.
And it's about getting a mobile home. Like, it is... In a lot of ways, the song I shouldn't like for all the things I talk about with like letting an idea breathe and go deeper, but it's just so breezy. And there is something about living in a mobile home that he's trying to express, that it's that same freewheeling kind of a nature.
And the music flows. It doesn't have this, like, because of the storyline, we have to have these ridiculous shifts. It's like, right. No, that song's just beginning to end, cruises.
And if it was in a storyline where, and it was meant to be, right, where... Yeah. I don't even think he knows at this point. Like, the character gets a mobile home. Like, I think that's, again, where, like, concept records and opera stuff, it totally...
What character? Me. What character, right?
It's the same thing with Claudio Sanchez, where he, like, writes a song. Okay, he wrote a song about, like, his son. But then he's like, oh, but the character has a son, and the character loves their son. I'm like, just say you love your son.
It's nothing wrong with that.
Not a good song, but
fathers everywhere, just say you love your son.
Don't write songs about it. The best father-son song I could think of is
All of My Love by Zeppelin. That's a really good,
I guess.
Well, don't say I guess.
Cats in the Cradle.
By Cat Stevens, right?
Cat Stevens.
It's not Cat Stevens.
Always feels like
everybody.
It's a trick. I'm always like, it's not gonna, Oh, Getting in Tune is so good. Anywho, Won't Get Fooled Again, I just want to quickly say.
Very good. Because
what's interesting about that song is that, like, it's become weirdly kind of politically co-opted, mm-hmm. both by the left and the right. They're like, oh, this is like... But I just think there's a complexity to what they're saying there that I would not expect necessarily from The Who. I don't see them as this, like, highly intellectual band. But I don't know, I like it a lot.
I kind of do see them as fairly intellectual.
I see them as wanting to seem like, I think Pete Townsend.
Well, that's the plight of artists. That's this show.
What, sir? No, this sounds like I'm dragging Pete Townsend. It's not. I think he's a visionary in the best and the worst meanings of that word to me.
Yes.
I think the larger lesson that I've taken away from listening to both The Who and Led Zeppelin is I love kind of piecing together this like larger quilt of like popular music, rock and roll, folk, every like all these different genres, like, and I love kind of getting little hints at, and clearly, like, neither of these bands are like the root of the tree, right, of kind of music you and I play with necessarily, because they have bands that influence them. I don't think I'm going to be listening to either of these bands very regularly. I think neither of these two are, like, when I think of like older music, and I'm thinking specifically in like the 60s, 70s range of music that I'm like always going back to, but I really still enjoy it. I think there's a lot of great stuff.
A few Who stuff, and Zeppelin will still just come in and out as naturally as they always have.
I mean, to be honest, like, the amount of songs I listen to after we're done listening to these artists anyway is pretty low.
I take big breaks. All right, let's get into ratings.
All right. I feel bad. I feel like I keep kind of waiting for you. I'm going in right now.
Yeah, you go
first. Zeppelin
was
at 6.75.
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm going to make
some wrong. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
6.85.
Wrong. I'm sorry. I was yelling at my cat. He was... doing something.
I stand by. I still think, to me, The Who, I got to give him a little bit higher of a rating. If we were going across their entire discographies, that might change.
All right. But you know, just because you upset me that much, I will go with 6.7, which fair. Is the rating you gave Zeppelin. I gave Weezer a 6.
That wasn't even, you gave them too high of a rating anyway.
Soak it in.
I can't but think you, of a band more deserving of a 5.
That's fine. But I'm saying soak that in. Like, Zeppelin is that much better than The Who. But The Who was still very, very enjoyable. Initially, I was kind of shaking my head, a little nervous, but they absolutely reeled me right back in. And with some deep tracks that I had completely forgotten about. I had heard all these albums, just it wasn't adhesive.
I think so. And I might explore further. I'm a little more, I think the later stuff is dodgier.
We may have a Who Too.
Who Too to You Too. Or a Zeppelin. What rhymes with Zeppelin?
Nothing.
This is why I'm the best in the biz, folks. My rhyme dictionary is just
kept in. Boom. Kept in. Well, Zeppelin has kept in for me.
Hey, look at you. Right. Look at you, man. You're killing it.
And I don't even like lyrics.
All right. We have to get prepared for our next episode. And we already let this fly. We have some guests coming in.
Yes. We got the power duo of Leftmore. Okay.
We have the power duo of Leftmore. That's Joe and Matt.
Yes.
Coming in.
It's going to be a blast. I can't wait. We're going to, I don't know if anybody remembers, but when we had Alex on, we just do one album. We're just
one
doing
album.
One album.
We don't want to torture our guests the way that we torture ourselves. So what is the album, Rob? You know this.
I do. It is Curse Your Branches by David Bazan or Bazin or possibly another pronunciation.
Let's wait for them on the episode. We'll wait for them to say the name.
Yeah. Yeah, but apparently he was in. I remember the name of this. Yeah, I remember the name of the band. I didn't really listen to him much, but I've taken a quick little glance at this album. I think we're going to have a good time.
I listened to the first 3 tracks this morning, and I'm also very excited. I think that, like you said, Pedro the Lion specifically is, I think a number of our songwriter friends bring them up a lot. And in classic Colton fashion, I'd always go, oh, cool. Never listen to it again. So
and the complete opposite for me. I should have listened. I can't believe I never really did.
We're gonna right some wrongs with this episode, and we're gonna talk to 2 really amazing people. It'll be good.
We are about to get really out intellectual. I think you and I are gonna come across as really dumb.
I'll say this now. What I'm finding is I have to say the really nice things about these people before they're on, or else it's like too embarrassing. I've always thought of those 2 as like it's like, oh, there's Leftmore. And then you and I are like we have Leftmore at home. Like there's the, there's like the really handsome, really
left,
like friendly,
left to be desired more.
Really like friendly, really intellectual, smart, great musicians, songwriters. And then like, we're like, oh, and then it's us. Like this will
hey,
be,
guys.
Hey, everybody.
No, but for all the listeners, you're really going to love these guys. Please check out not only the album we're about to discuss again,
Curse Your Branches,
but check out Leftmore as well. It's really good stuff. I think they have more on Bandcamp.
That's the central place, right? Yeah. All right, everybody. Until then, enjoy yourselves, have fun, be safe, and thank you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, this is Rob.
This is no, I screwed it up. This is Colton.
And this is Lucky. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
This is Tommy. This is Tommy Addy.
Tommy, yeah. Lucky.